So I moved to New Orleans the day before Hurricane Katrina hit. I moved into my dorm room for my freshman year of college at Tulane University on the Saturday before Hurricane Katrina hit on that Sunday. So I didn't even spend a night in New Orleans before I evacuated. Came back to New Orleans a couple months later and began filming all the things I was seeing around me, all the changes that I saw happening. I was really inspired by a book called Shock Doctrine by Naomi Klein, about disaster capitalism, where those in power use disasters to push changes that they've been wanting to make for a long time. And while people are in a state of shock, they're able to push these changes through. So I was watching this stuff happen right in front of my eyes in a lot of different ways, most notably within the school system. All the public schools were closed and charterized and started run by private institutions. The major public housing developments were all closed down and turned into private mixed income developments, and the major public hospital did not reopen. And so initially I kind of was like, I'm gonna make this huge documentary that's gonna be all about privatization in New Orleans, post-Katrina, disaster capitalism. And then I pretty quickly realized that that would have been like a 20-hour documentary and nobody would have watched it. And it just, I had not have the know-how or capability to do anything of that scale. So Charity Hospital, which is the major public hospital in New Orleans, very similar to Grady, drew my attention right away. I worked in the Iberville Public Housing Development. It was the last of the public housing developments to get redeveloped. It was the only one that survived Katrina, and it was just two blocks from Charity Hospital. And I helped to run the Boys and Girls Club there. And the basketball court, where we spent a lot of our time, faced Charity Hospital. And I began asking questions first to the residents of the Iberville, you know, what is this huge building? And the old ladies in the Iberville, I have to give them credit for schooling me on Charity Hospital first. You know, baby, that's Charity Hospital. And they would talk about it with this love and affection and gratitude, almost as if it was a family member. You know, they'd all been born there. They had lives saved there. They had their children there. And I could tell that there was something really special about that place just by talking to them.
People call it Big Charity. I also think that it's like Mother Charity.
Charity Hospital was the lifeblood of the city of New Orleans.
I was born there, and everybody in my family was born there, Charity.
It was the heartbeat for the city of New Orleans.
Big Chief, born at Charity Hospital.
Charity Hospital gave birth to most of the citizens of New Orleans and gave life to many dying people. If there's something to be called your mother, it was Charity Hospital. That's our mom.
I could feel a lot of sadness when they looked up at this. You know, they felt that it was as if a family member was gone. And I think that they also felt anger. They felt that this was almost done out of a lack of respect for those who depended on the hospital, that those in power didn't care enough about them to reopen the hospital, that there were things that they didn't understand that weren't transparent as to why the hospital wasn't open. And you could tell there was a sense of mystery that went along with the hospital. So I began interviewing other people. I began interviewing doctors who used to work there, nurses who used to work there, activists, lawyers, preservationists, architects, patients. I mean, anybody I could who knew anything about Charity Hospital and would give me 5 minutes, I would bring my camera and stick in their face and ask them questions. And the story began to unfold in front of me. And at first, I thought that the story would only be about what happened to Charity post-Katrina. And then I realized that it had this incredible history and found all this really powerful archival footage dating back to the 20s and 40s, you know, really old, beautiful footage. And then I also realized that there was an amazing story from inside the hospital during Katrina. The nurses and doctors were trapped in there for 5 days and the electricity went out and they had to do some really heroic things to keep people alive. And almost nobody died inside the hospital during that time with thousands of people trapped in there. So that became an interesting part of the story. And then what happened after the storm was the most interesting part to me. What happened after the storm was that the Army came in and cleaned the hospital. They did a survey of all the structures, all the hospitals around the city, and decided that Charity Hospital was the best place to rebuild healthcare in the city. They brought in hundreds of troops. Only the basement flooded in the hospital, so they pumped out the basement. They cleaned out the first three floors where people were staying. They had hundreds of troops in there, Army, Navy, National Guard. The 42nd Airborne was in there, and the three-star Lieutenant General Honoré led the cleanup of the hospital.
We had the decontamination team. We had the Navy there. Then the 82nd Airborne came. Two whole companies.
It was cleaned, occupiable, according to the U.S. Navy OSHA standards and their testing.
It was ready to go. I mean, we had hundreds of troops in there, and we know how to do this.
Spotless. Beds were made, gowns were on it, waiting for patients. And we showed up in uniform, ready to go to work.
And when I reported it to the state, if you want to open it, we can do it right now. And then I was told that there's no plan to reopen it.
Lieutenant General Honore reports to the governor, the hospital is clean, let's get it open. And she says, you need to get all your men out of there, we're closing it up. Everybody is told to vacate the premise immediately. You'll be arrested for trespassing. The nurses and doctors who've been in there for 2 weeks cleaning all of a sudden were kicked out. And they set up tents in the parking lot. And that's where they had to administer their care for the next month. Then they went into the convention center where they had to administer care in army tents. And then they eventually renovated a department store where they cared for people. And still to this day, Charity Hospital is abandoned. And people are still suffering because of the lack of care in the city in Charity's absence. There was an interview I did with a doctor, Dr. James Moises, who was an emergency physician inside Charity Hospital. He helped lead the cleanup among the physicians, and I did an interview with him. And when I did that interview with him, that was when I realized, wow, there is a serious, intense, deep story here. He was a doctor that was very vocal about Charity Hospital not reopening, and they had rallies to reopen Charity Hospital. And at one of the big rallies, the night before the rally where he was supposed to speak, he got a call from LSU. LSU is the university that ran Charity Hospital, just similarly to how Emory helps run Grady or NYU helps run Bellevue. They told him, you are not to speak at this rally or your contract will be in jeopardy. You'll lose your job if you speak at this rally. And him being the courageous person he is, resigned right there and spoke at the rally and has been speaking ever since. And he's not the only person that we interviewed that spoke of being threatened by LSU to not speak out about how clean the hospital was and about some of the things that were happening there. So when I did that interview with him, that's when I was like, whoa, this is a crazy story. And that really energized me. There was footage that we licensed from old libraries and old TV shows, you know, back when they used to have travel movies, you know, before there was TV and you would go see a movie about a far off land or whatever. You know, they had a little story from, I think it aired in the 40s. It was like a travel movie about Charity Hospital, which is just such cool footage. And they have this awesome narrator who's super suave. And then there's footage that was shot all through the century. There's some amazing footage in there that was shot by the Discovery Channel right around the turn of the century. And it was kind of like a reality show inside the ER, kind of like Cops almost, but they follow doctors in the ER. And anybody who knows New Orleans ER or Charity Hospital's trauma room knows a lot of crazy things went down there. I'm sure it's very similar to Grady's, and those doctors and nurses have seen everything you can imagine. So there's some incredibly intense footage of people having their lives saved inside the trauma room or the infamous Room 4. The most powerful footage that is in the film to me is the footage that was shot by nurses and doctors and security guards inside the hospital during the storm. You know, they had little camcorders or shooting with their cell phones, shooting these prayers and songs and hugging and really just incredibly emotional, intense time during the storm. And the footage post-Katrina of the hospital, it's such a beautiful building. It's an easy building to shoot. It's kind of a photographer's dream to shoot this building because it's so beautiful. It has such incredible architecture. And inside the hospital is very eerie. And I've loved shooting and exploring the hospital. And that's been some of the most fun footage to shoot. There's something that everybody can relate to and learn from when it comes to the compassion and dedication that was exhibited at Charity Hospital. It was a public hospital in every sense of the word, where they took care of people no matter who you were, no matter how much money you had, whether you had insurance or don't have insurance, they took care of you at Charity Hospital. And then I also think that everybody can understand and feel the theme of those in power making decisions that don't always have the needs of the poorest people in our society at heart, and decisions that may be in their eyes good for the city as a whole, but leave out some of those who don't have a voice. And so I think it's important that those who don't have a voice are able to have their story told in films like these. And I think that as a filmmaker, it's our job, as filmmakers, it's our job to tell their story.
Thank you.